Welcome. Welcome to this sanctuary, this sacred space, this special time, this community made holy by our presence and by our commitment. It is good to be together. I would like to invite forward the Sullivan family, who's going to help with lighting our candles this morning. First, we light our chalice, and I invite you to read together the words printed in your order of service. Candles, fire, and stars. These are the symbols of this most blessed of seasons. Candles for the banishing of darkness. Fire to warm hearth and home. Stars to beckon us, guiding our footsteps to the holiest. That sounds much better, huh? Great, thank you. And I'm excited that now we have come to the time in our season in which we begin the beautiful tradition of lighting our Advent wreath. In ancient times, candles were mounted on wagon wheels that were decorated with evergreens. The candles were lit during the dark weeks leading up to the winter solstice, when the return of the light was celebrated. Christians adopted a similar tradition of lighting candles during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, celebrating the light that Jesus brought into the world. So each of these four candles stands for one of the messages of this Advent season. So today, on this first Sunday of Advent, we light the first purple candle, which stands for hope, for the hope which uplifts our spirits, for the hope that gives courage to those experiencing dark times, for the hope that we claim for ourselves, and the hope that we bring to others in this season. We light this candle. Blessed be. And now I invite you to rise in body or spirit and sing together hymn number 1 in your hymnals. May nothing evil cross this door. I invite you to remain standing as we read together the words printed in your order of service, our covenant. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. may be seated. And I invite forward our Director of Religious Education, Michelle, to share a message for all ages.
Good morning. Whoops, that's not on. Good morning. That's better. So today, Eileen was talking about lighting our Advent candle and that ancient people used to decorate wagon wheels. And so I did a little research because I was curious as to why that happened. And a long time ago, now imagine before electricity, before even houses and fireplaces, there was still people. And they had to make their own homes, sometimes in caves, sometimes they built houses, but certainly they were not like the ones we have now. So have you noticed what's happening during the afternoon, like around 4 or 4:30? What happens outside, Jack? It gets dark. Now, what happens, what time does it usually get dark in the summer? What do you think, Henry? 8:30, even 9 o'clock it gets late. So can you imagine living way back then, okay? You don't have any electricity. You don't probably even have a heated house. And it starts getting dark at 4 and 4:30, and you don't really understand why that's happening. Does anyone here know why it starts getting light so early? Any ideas? I heard someone say, yeah. What do you think, Jack? Yeah, it's the Earth's rotation, and it involves the sun, and it's all very technical. I barely understand it, and I'm an adult, and I know this because I've been taught it. Back in the time, way back before electricity, people didn't know that. They thought everything moved around the Earth, and they didn't really understand why it was getting dark. So they thought they had to help the light come back. And the way they did that was at around the time of the winter solstice, which is coming up in December. That becomes the longest day of the year, and the shortest day of the year. After that, it starts getting a little longer. The days start getting a little longer and a little longer and a little longer until we hit the summer solstice, where they start getting shorter again. And they saw the changing of the seasons, these ancient people, kind of like like a great wheel. That's the symbol they put to it, and they called this the wheel of the year. And they gave the name to the wheel Yule, which is an old-fashioned word meaning wheel. They decorated the doors and windows of their places with wreaths to symbolize the turning of that wheel, just like the whole year goes around. That's what they were thinking. The wheel goes around just like the year goes around. And they gathered in circles to observe the beginning of this new year that they called the winter solstice. And on that night, they gathered to celebrate. And in the northern hemisphere, that's where we live, on the Earth, this is the longest, the shortest night of the year, and the longest night. And I'm not doing very well here. It's the shortest day and the longest night. However, this is what they knew. They knew that by celebrating that the light would continue, but they didn't want to take this for granted just in case it didn't happen, because remember, they weren't sure how it happened. So they thought they had to help the light be reborn by honoring the time of darkness. They were to watch and wait, hoping like a beacon in their hearts. While the people waited, they prayed and they feasted. They decorated their homes so that the returning light would find welcome and beauty in their new home, in the new year. And one of the things that they did, what do you think they did to make their places look more welcoming and more joyful? What might they do if they're living in dark? What do you think, anybody? Other than Jack, someone else has to have an opinion here. What do you think, Masha? They did candles. They lit fires. They did things to make sure that they had light, and that sometimes they believed that spirits might come. Different people believed different things, and they wanted to make sure people found them, and they also wanted to make sure that the light seemed festive and bright. And one of the things that we're doing, and we're going to talk a lot about the different holidays that are all centered around this original solstice in a couple weeks in religious education, but today in particular, we mentioned Advent already, but we're starting King George and Saint George and the dragon, and that is based on the solstice. So that's based on one of the most ancient holidays ever. And so we'll learn more about that today. And there is tryouts for that today during RE. All right, and that is my message. Thank you.
We have a tradition in this church that as our children and youth leave for religious education, they take with them a flame kindled from our chalice to symbolize the light of this sanctuary going down with them. So I invite forward Kate Sullivan, who will be carrying our light. And as Kate and Michelle pass you, I invite children and youth and their teachers to stand up and process out. I invite you into a time of meditation and prayer. I will share some words, and then we will share together some moments of silence. O light of life, we come together this morning with grateful hearts, thankful for the many gifts we have been given. During this busy holiday season, we ask that you, Spirit of Life, would bring us moments of calm so that we may reflect on all that we have to feel lucky for the air we breathe, for the food we eat, for good companions, and for this gift of fellowship with one another. We gather in thanks this morning. We lift up our hearts to you today and each day, O Light of Life, and we pray for peace in our world, our communities, peace in our families, and in ourselves. All this we lift up to you today and so much more. In gratitude we pray, and we take these moments now to reflect on the prayers of our hearts in silence. Amen. Our church community gives us a great gift, the opportunity to support this beloved community with our time, our talents, and our treasure. And so during this time, I invite the ushers to come forward as our morning's offering is gratefully given and received. a reading by the poet Mary Oliver from her book, A Thousand Mornings. Lines written in the days of growing darkness. Every year we have been witness to it, how the world descends into a rich mash in order that it may resume. And therefore, who would cry out to the petals on the ground to say, knowing as we must, how the vivacity of what was is married to the vitality of what will be? I don't say it's easy, but what else will do if the love one claims to have for the world is true? So let us go on, though the sun be swinging east, and the ponds be cold and black, and the flowers of the year be doomed. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and sing together hymn number 55, Dark of Winter. You may be seated. Now, I know that some people are particular about this, so now that we have celebrated Thanksgiving and survived, I think I am finally allowed to say Happy Holidays. This holiday time, this season of lights, is a time of abundance. It is a time for giving and receiving gifts, attending parties, shopping until our credit cards are maxed out, or is that just me, and eating and drinking until our waistlines are bulging. I have fond memories as the child of an interfaith marriage of gleefully opening gifts every single night of Hanukkah, and then proceeding on to open more gifts a few weeks later on Christmas. I also remember playing dreidel with my mother and gorging myself on gelt chocolate coins, only to quickly make room for a feast of fried potato latkes with applesauce and sour cream. And I remember, too, the yearly ritual of pulling out what seemed to be an endless supply of boxes from the crawl space underneath our stairs, each of which teemed with Christmas decorations of every sort. I would spend hours with my mother, my Jewish mother, adorning our giant Christmas tree with tinsel, lights, and handmade ornaments in the shapes of stars, angels, and a whole menagerie of animals. And we would top our tree every year with a Star of David, since one half of our family was Jewish. It was always a total production, taking up a ton of time and energy, but we all looked forward to it. The holidays for me growing up were absolutely abundant in every way. An abundance of energy, gifts, food, parties, and time with family and friends. Overflowing, plentiful, and totally over-the-top abundance. The years since leaving home have been busy and jam-packed too, although in slightly different ways. I no longer work as a professional musician, but when I did, the holiday season was always the busiest. For the few years that I worked in retail, of course the winter holidays brought with them a demanding and eventful month of extra shifts, grumpy shoppers, and long lines. The holidays even brought this type of hustle and bustle during the years that I worked as a receptionist in an acupuncture clinic, because stress-related conditions brought patients in more frequently during these weeks leading up to Thanksgiving and Christmas. And now that I have worked in churches for the past few years, it has been no different. This time of year is busy and bright, full of parties, functions, concerts, and of course, a mound of sermons to write and services to plan. I always manage to find some time to squeeze in visits with family and old friends too, amidst the abundant busyness the holiday season brings. This time of year is without a doubt a time of great joy, much food, less than average sleep, and many gifts of all different types. Such abundance. I can imagine that many of you have had holiday seasons like these, full of hustle and bustle, bright with the glow of tinsel, lights, and candles. I certainly have. And yet, this time of year, this season of lights, without fail seems to bring me a small sense of sadness and loss as it arrives each year. And I feel without fail some darkness amidst the many bright lights that are a hallmark of this year, this time of year. Now, when I first began to notice this darkness during my teenage years, I felt puzzled and even a little guilty that I felt some sadness during this holiday season. I found it particularly strange that my mood would often drift into one of loss. Why did I feel darkness amidst this season of lights? What was I losing amidst this season of abundant giving and receiving? It really didn't make sense. And honestly, I didn't think too much about it for several years, until preparing for the holidays this year and getting assigned the Sunday after Thanksgiving as a day that I would preach. So I turned things over and over in my mind, trying to decide what to preach about. Hanukkah and the winter solstice were already covered. So was Advent. Dang it. And of course, Christmas was not yet for a few weeks. And I'd already preached on the Hindu festival of lights, Diwali. Well, no holidays left to preach on, I thought. Gosh. I would just feel a little disingenuous preaching again about glimmering lights and all the happiness that this season brings. Because the truth is, and I was just talking about this with one of you this morning before service, some of us just don't like the holidays. Or maybe we do. I do. But maybe this season can bring us sadness and a feeling of darkness amidst the light. Maybe some of us feel the absence of loved ones most keenly at this time of year, loved ones who have been lost to death or illness or broken relationships. Maybe we wish we had more vacation days off to spend with our family and our children. Maybe we feel guilty that we don't have enough time to see all of the friends we'd like to visit at this time of year. Maybe we wish for just a little more money in our bank accounts to buy that one more gift to brighten someone's holiday. Maybe it's the first year that our grown children are away at college or working and not coming home for the holidays. Maybe it's sad to have to split time between relatives who are divorced or who live far away or who just don't get along. Maybe we are extra tired at this time of year and because of all of the demands the holidays places upon us, and we wish for a little more peace, a little more time for reflection, a little more time to volunteer at a food bank or wrap gifts for the homeless. Those are things I used to do during the holidays that I haven't had time to do in years. And that's sad. So rewind for a minute. What did I just say? I said that some of us just don't like the holidays. And it might be a hard thing to say, especially from this pulpit, but I'll say it again because I think it deserves saying. Some of us are not happy at this time of year for all kinds of reasons. This season of bright lights, parties, and gifts can actually be the hardest time of year for some of us. And so today, I want to acknowledge that. And so for any of you who are feeling some inner darkness during this season of lights, you are seen. You are seen. It is allowed to be hard. So I began thinking about all of this because I have a family member who doesn't enjoy Thanksgiving. Weird, right? I never understood why. We didn't have as big a family as most people I knew. Only 6 or 8 of us would gather to celebrate Thanksgiving together at this family member's house. So I rationalized it can't be that she's feeling overwhelmed. It can't be that she can't afford it because she was very comfortable economically. It certainly couldn't be that she didn't like the food because I had seen her delight in leftover turkey sandwiches while I, the lone vegetarian, ate mashed potatoes for weeks after Thanksgiving. This family member of mine had always been very reflective and expressive, so I knew explicitly that she felt very grateful for her many blessings, and so I thought, why on earth doesn't she like Thanksgiving, this holiday that is meant for giving thanks? Why? And yet every year I saw the change in her mood around Thanksgiving. She seemed relieved for it to pass each year, a sentiment I've heard from several of you. And my family member, after Thanksgiving would pass, gladly got back into the rhythm of the holidays by decorating her Christmas tree and lighting her Hanukkah candles. And it was only recently that she and I had a conversation about Thanksgiving. I'm not sure exactly how it came up. And in this conversation, I learned why she didn't like this particular holiday. She told me she felt a great sense of loss as her father and her parents-in-law aged, and that this was one time of year, the one time of year, that her Jewish father and her Christian in-laws were all together in one place. And as her own father became ill and frail, he would demand to be brought home to Maryland, which was a 3-hour round trip, as he was still in the process of chewing his last bite of turkey. And so my family member, who had spent all day cooking, was relegated to the car to drive her father home to the assisted living facility where he lived for most of my life. It was sad for her to see her father like this, and their relationship, which had already been quite strained, continued to deteriorate. This family member of mine wished that her father could have just sucked it up and stayed for a few more minutes to give her a moment to breathe. Or even better, she thought maybe one of her 3 brothers could have gotten it together enough to have come to her house and given their father a ride. But that didn't happen. And then her beloved father-in-law died right around Thanksgiving. And then the icing on the cake, her mother-in-law descended deeper into Alzheimer's disease. And one Thanksgiving, a few years later, she did not show up on time for the family dinner. And when my family member called her mother-in-law angrily stated, "I do not know what you are talking about. Today is not Thanksgiving." And so that was the last straw. And it was sort of sad to realize why my cheerful, generous, and grateful family member didn't enjoy Thanksgiving. But once we talked about it, I realized that I shared some of her same feelings about the holiday season. She felt a small inner darkness at this time of year, just like I did. So I was not alone. And the more I've talked with people as the leader of a small group ministry at my church in Florida, talked with people as a chaplain working with veterans in North Carolina, talked with people as a resident assistant living with undergraduate students at Boston University, and talked with people as a minister at First Parish in Malden and in this congregation. The more I have talked with people, the more I have realized that the holidays can be a time of sadness and loss for many, many people. And that doesn't mean that we don't also celebrate the beauty and the brightness that this season brings, but it means that there is a small shadow, a small feeling of darkness amidst the bright lights. The Reverend Susan Manker Seal from the Beacon UU Church in Flagstaff, Arizona, puts it this way. She says, "From quiet darkness to festive lights, this holiday time is filled with contradictions, and in many cases, a little madness. As the holidays approach, anxieties tend to rise, and instead of creating or finding quiet time, people are confronted with the madness of traffic, of people packing the malls, of too much noise and lights and sounds." And indeed, I also feel that this holiday time is a time of paradox and contradiction. We say that Jesus or family or hope is the reason for the season, yet it often becomes increasingly difficult for us to carve out time for family and friends, quiet reflection, or volunteering during the busy holiday season. Another paradox, we look forward to the holidays all year long, yet it seems to fly by amidst a haze of busyness. And yet another paradox, we kindle festive lights for Hanukkah, Christmas, and Advent, illuminating our homes and sanctuaries, while outside, the days descend faster and faster into nights, the darkness growing, descending. This paradox of darkness and light speaks to me especially during this time of year. And indeed, I realized this year that for me, the transition from fall into winter that comes along with the holidays brings with it an inherent sense of loss and grief. I feel very grateful because this autumn, I was given a great gift of time to reflect on the sense of loss I felt during the holidays. You see, as many of you know, I drive a long way to be here with you all each day. My home is in Jamaica Plain, just on the edge of Boston, and I commute about 35 miles each way out here to Stowe. And I go a little out of my way to take Route 117 out this way because it is such a beautiful drive. I see some nods in the audience. That was really one of the things that struck me when I first came here about a year ago to meet with Reverend Tom to discuss the possibility of me serving as your intern minister this year. That sense of calm I felt come over me as I drove along the gently rolling roads of 117, full of farms, beautiful trees, a placid pond, and quaint small businesses. So when I began working here, my commute was actually a highlight of my day, since I got to enjoy the beautiful scenery on my way out here and on my way back home. And as autumn came, my commute got exponentially more lovely. with the changing of the leaves, I found myself driving a little more slowly to soak in the vibrancy of the colors before me, presented to me like a precious gift each day on my commute. And as I learned the route from my home to this church, little landmarks began popping up on my mental map. Only they weren't intersections or junctions or exits. They were the small, exquisite scenes of autumn that greeted me each day on my way to work. The large, round tree with its vibrant yellow leaves gracefully shading the retirement home in West End. Driving by, I thought each day of what a gift it would be for the elders inside to get to look out and see those beautiful leaves. And more landmarks on my map. The driveway with its brighter-than-life flowerbed, violet and scarlet and orange, all clamoring up against one another, catching my eye at the bend of the road in Sudbury. The pond with its reflection of autumn leaves, mist rising from its mirrored surface in the early autumn mornings. A bed of mums preparing for harvest at the farm in Concord, or a field of kale, or a crop of pumpkins. A line of tall trees at the back of one house on 117 were so vibrant that without fail, I uttered the words, my God, each time I drove by. Because gazing into the faces of those leaves was as close to seeing God as a living person could get, I thought each day. I truly savored my commute during the months of September and October. And it's funny because I don't really like driving. But my long commute became one of the most treasured parts of my day, thanks to the abundant gifts of autumn and the long, winding expanse of Route 117. And then I went to visit my father in Maryland in late October, returned to Massachusetts, drove out here to Stowe once more, and found, to my dismay, that the vast majority of those beautiful leaves had fallen. The gentle tree at the retirement home had lost its fiery leaves. The commotion of flowers had withered to brown. The branches of the trees were now skeletal, with only a hint left of their former glory. And yes, I actually found myself crying in my car as I had the realization that, yes, this transition into winter that accompanies the holidays is inherently a time of loss. And if it hasn't yet brought us the loss of a family member or friend, it will. But without fail, it brings us the loss of the warm weather and the beautiful fall leaves and the vibrant autumn flowers. So I was crying in my car that day on my way out to Stowe when I passed, as I do each day, St. Bridget's Cemetery in Maynard. And to my joy, the host of trees that keep watch over the tombstones still had a lot of their leaves left that day. So I pulled into the cemetery and I stood a while, the wind whispering, making the still orange leaves dance on their branches, and every once in a while sending a few leaves drifting quietly to the ground. And I mourned the loss of the beauty that I was privileged to witness each day in the shining faces of the leaves atop the graceful bodies of the trees. But it gave me peace to realize there in the cemetery that those shining leaves fell atop the graves of loved ones now gone. How peaceful it must be to sleep beneath a blanket of beautiful autumn leaves, I realized. What a gift to be covered by such beauty. Those leaves must die, just as every living thing must, but they were with us for a while. They were with us for a while. As the poet Mary Oliver taught us in our reading, we are witness to it every year, the world descending so that it may resume in spring. How the vivacity of what was is married to the vitality of what will be. And to know this brings me peace and reminds me that, yes, this season of light is indeed also a season of darkness. It brings me peace to realize that we would do well to realize the dark moments amidst our times of light, and even that the darkness can bring us peace during these days of busyness that the holiday season brings. As we sang in our hymn, Dark of Winter, soft and still, your quiet calm surrounds me. Let my thoughts go where they will, ease my mind profoundly. Darkness, soothe my weary eyes, that I may see more clearly. When my heart with sorrow cries, comfort and caress me. And then my soul may hear a voice, a still small voice of love eternal. Darkness, when my fears arise, let your peace flow through me. And so may the darkness ease our minds during any moments of sadness that these coming days may bring. May we each allow the dark places in our own lives to bring us quiet in order that we may hear that still, small voice which lives in each of us, but which is sometimes obscured by the many demands of our days. Darkness, bring us peace, quiet calm, and comfort during this season of light and throughout all the seasons of our lives. So may it be. Blessed be. And amen. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and sing together our final hymn, number 57, All Beautiful, the March of Days. Light of life, be with us in this season of celebration as we celebrate the great gifts of our lives. Help us to be the light of hope, hope for ourselves and hope for each other. Be with us too in our dark moments and help us to see these too as gifts. May peace be ours during the holidays and in each season of our lives. Blessed be, and go in peace.